Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Hello and welcome to Talking Eds. I'm Lidia Nicastro, your host for today's session. In this program, we are going to discuss gender and sexuality. For our panel today, we welcome our guest from the IMS group, Ksenia Joksimovic, a postgraduate psychodrama psychotherapy student, queer feminist and activist from Belgrade, Serbia. They hold a bachelor degree in andragogy, adult education, and are an experienced youth worker and trainer, with experience working with adults as well. Ksenia is part of the executive board of IGLIO and a member of Altero, Association for Personal Training, Education, Development and Empowerment, and actively participates in its work, especially using forum theater technique to tackle LGBTIQ issues and multiple forms of oppression. They believe that activism must be intersectional, inclusive and norm-critical in order to be meaningful. Welcome.
Thank you very much for your call. I'm really, really happy to be here and talk about gender and sexuality.
Thank you. Also joining us from the IMS group is Lauren Scott, who is a passionate advocate for the rights of LGBT community as well as for overall gender equality. Lauren uses male pronouns and was one of the first openly transgender people to work as an international volunteer with the United States Peace Corps. He just completed his Peace Corps service in the Philippines last year, where he worked with families and youth to critically think about ideas of gender roles, diversity and body image. He also did trainings with the Peace Corps headquarters in Washington, D.C. on what it's like to serve as a transgender person in the Peace Corps and on which improvements that could be made to the organization to make the experience better for future lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender volunteers. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. It's really great to be here and to be having this conversation with you all today.
Thank you. So, Ksenia, I use the pronoun they while introducing you, as it is your personal pronoun. Can you explain a little bit about gender-neutral, gender-inclusive pronouns, what they are, why to use it, when, and how?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sure. Well, first of all, I identify as a genderqueer person or gender non-binary person, which for me means that I don't like to put the totality or who I am into a box called gender, which is supposed to be opposite. At least that's something that I was learned in my society, that we have just two genders. And it never resonated with me, because I think that we all have both masculine and feminine, as a society would call it, tendencies, characteristics, and so on. So as a gender non-conforming person, the pronoun that I use is they, not he or she. And there is also gender neutral pronoun that other gender non-conforming people or gender queer people very often use for themselves and ask people to refer them with the pronoun they have chosen for themselves because of their gender identity. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Lauren, can you tell us about how was your journey discovering your true gender identity? When did you first realize that the gender assigned to you on your birth was not your true gender? And how was the process to get to your identity from that point to the one that you are at right now?
Sure, yeah. Similar to what Ksenia was saying, I believe that gender is experienced more as a spectrum of identities and not as an either-or option. You either are male or you are female. And it's a little bit of a long story because I think you're asking me about my whole life. So from the time I was born, the doctors when I was born did assign to me the gender of female at birth. And I think there's a couple of key moments that I have in life that sort of led me to where I am as a transgender man. And one of those is that my parents didn't really instill gender roles on us as kids, myself and my siblings. So if I wanted to, you know, play with trucks, I could play with trucks. If I wanted to dress in a pink dress, I could dress in a pink dress. It wasn't really a big deal. So the first time I have memory of gender in relation to myself is when probably the age of 8, my mother let me get my hair cut for the first time. And I got this atrocious haircut. It was probably like the worst haircut I've ever had in my life, even now that I'm bald. It was still worse than that. It was this really, really short bowl cut. I said, all right, just cut it all off. Like, cut off all of my hair, essentially. And it was just really short above the ears. It looked awful. But at that point, other children and people in my peer group started asking me, who didn't know me, started asking me, are you a boy or a girl? And at the age of 8, I was kind of like really alarmed by this question and had never really given it much thought in regards to myself. So usually what my response was to stare at them and then run away. And I think I just didn't really have the ability to critically think about things at that point, but clearly I was having some like conflict. And so the sort of idea of are you a boy or a girl kind of stayed with me for a really long time. And then I grew up in not a really small town, but a town that didn't really have a whole lot of transgender people that I was able to meet or interact with. So when about 16 or 17, I was shown a book at my work, and it was a book called Body Portraits by Lauren Cameron. And it's he's a transgender man, and he has taken portraits of himself and other transgender men and talked about their gender identity and their gender expressions in this book, and it's a collection of photographs. And I remember I read this book and I started crying. I was like, this was the first time that I saw something that I felt like this is as close to sort of what I felt of who I am that I've ever experienced in my life. So that was a really pivotal moment for me. And from there, things just kind of slowly progressed. I also moved out to San Francisco, California, where I was surrounded by a lot of people who have various gender identities and sexual orientations. And I had access to, for the first time in my life, the hormone testosterone that I was able to start taking there, and decided that that's what I wanted to do to make my outward appearance more in line with who I felt I was and who I feel I am. So those are kind of sort of the highlights that have led me to where I am, but it's definitely been a long process, and I was fortunate enough to have the support of really good friends and family, which was pretty crucial as well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for sharing that with us.
No problem.
I have a question for both. I'm from a country, Brazil. Although the legal rights of LGBTIQ community have improved considerably during the past years, violence against this community is so strong that a member is killed pretty much every day. Being the country that kills more LGBTIQs in the world, and it makes hard and dangerous to live there as being an LGBTIQ person. How is it to be queer in your own countries?
I think it's to be queer, if you ask me, in terms of being gender non-conforming. In my country, that is something which is still, I think, very new and strange to a lot of people, because the patriarchy in my country, which is Serbia, I come from Serbia, is really, really strong, and there are a lot of assumptions how people should dress and look and behave and act and think and feel when it comes to their gender identity, and there is an assumption that we only have two genders. So if you do not conform, you can face, I don't know, family exclusion, you can be kicked out of home, deal with homelessness issues or bullying at school by the teachers and the students themselves. Because I think in my country, the thing is, the political climate is very right-wing. So human rights and respect of human rights is not something which is recognized by the government. So although we do need to work, we activists, I mean, we do need to work parallelly on the policy level to introduce gender LGBTQ inclusive policies. We have to work on the level of law to improve our anti-discrimination law, and on the other side to work on raising awareness of people, what it means actually to be LGBTQI. But at the same time, I think if we want to do that and achieve that, we have to have a political climate which is going to be at least supportive to some extent. Because, for example, last week, it happened in Belgrade, which is the capital of Serbia. Two trans women were attacked on the street by, I think, one of them were attacked by five men and beaten, like, heavily. So when she called a taxi because she wanted to go to the hospital, the taxi driver told her that he's not going to drive the person who is like dressing like her and who is pretending to be something, you know, in his opinion that he thought that she's not. So he refused to take her to hospital. She stayed on the street and they continued to beat her until some like person who was just passing by called the taxi and went with her to the hospital. then the taxi driver accepted to take her. And then she went to the police, and then the police officer said, oh, it's really a holiday, it's the end of April, I don't have time to deal with this. I mean, why do you do that to yourself? Why do you look the way you look? I mean, so he basically didn't have her the time to tell what happened so the police can act accordingly. So there is a lot of, I think, institutional homophobia and transphobia, which is normalized in our society. It's not just the general population, it's the institutions as well, because of the lack of political will to act as it was supposed to when it comes to protection of the human rights.
I think for myself, being from the United States, it's really interesting because we have a very long history of advocates fighting for LGBTQI rights. And a lot of these things we have as a part of our history that are similar to what's happening in Brazil and in Serbia. Mm-hmm. If you look at the story of Brandon Tina, or if you look at Matthew Shepard, some people who were really high-profile cases who were really severely beaten and murdered as a part of our history in that struggle and in that rights, for those rights. And I think that it's really interesting what's happening right now in the States, because there's a really big difference between the youth culture and the older adults. So even with transgender people, we have this sort of dichotomy of, even if, like, transgender people are starting to gain a little bit more acceptance, but even then, people say, okay, we'll accept you because you are still either male or female. This idea of gender being fluid is still very new and is not accepted in any form. But if you look at the youth in the States, and people like Will Smith's child, Jaden, who is very gender fluid in their expression and just showed up in, like, sort of heels and women's wear to, like, a red carpet event. So you have this youth culture that is very much not caring about gender roles and about this sort of dichotomy, and is much more lenient in regards to sexual orientation. But the people who are making the laws and who are in charge of the policy are from a completely different generation. So you have youth who are very much in unrest, and policymakers who are trying to keep them from having legal rights, or trying to keep LGBTQI people in general from having legal rights. So you have this, like, sort of tension right now that I think is kind of at a point where it's probably going to come to a head pretty soon in one way or another.
It's interesting that you mentioned gender fluid, and I was talking about queer. So I would like to... Queer is a popular term, like we were talking about youth, the young generations. So it's a popular term with these generations and activists, and is used by members of the LGBTIQ community as an umbrella term for sexual and gender minorities. But reclaiming it can be controversial because it's being accused of making older generations feel uncomfortable because of the usage as a derogatory word in the past, or erasing identities and creating a false homogeneity. So, Xenia, what's your position in relation to the use of queer, and why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for asking that question. I think that's a very frequent and question, and a very important question to address. It is true that queer has somehow negative connotations, because historically and traditionally it was an abusive term which was used to belittle us in a way. But then I think, as Lauren said, younger generations are really more open to exploring themselves and expressing themselves regardless of the social expectations, norms. And I think this is something which is happening because we are finding a support in each other. So the queer as a term has been reappropriated in a way and reclaimed as a symbol of pride, because basically queer means being a bit unusual, and being different and unusual is nothing to be ashamed of. It's actually a beautiful thing. And in terms of identities, it is a very broad term and includes people who do not conform to social norms when it comes to gender and sexuality. So queer as a term can be an umbrella term which includes people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, asexual when it comes to sexuality, or gender non-binary, transgender, queer when it comes to gender identity, or people who are intersex when it comes to bodily characteristics, and so on. So it's very broad. But for different people, it really means different things. So I always prefer to ask people what it means to them personally. And when they say I'm queer, I'm really curious to hear what they mean by that. In terms of the academia, queer theory actually argues that people cannot be captured holistically in terms of their sexual orientation, gender identities, gender expressions, and sex characteristics and bodily diversity by simple binary categories. So queer theory is focused on the analysis of heteronormativity and cisnormativity as predominant social norms. Heteronormativity is an assumption that all people are heterosexual. Cisnormativity is an assumption that all people are cisgender, meaning that their gender identity is in alignment with sex assigned at birth. So basically, queer theory wants to understand how these social norms contribute to marginalization of people who do not conform to them. And queer theory calls for challenging these oppressive social norms and power systems in the society, such as homophobia, biphobia, transphobia. And of course, they're all in a way intersecting together with, Islamophobia, racism, xenophobia. So all oppressive systems are cooperating in a way together to remain the status quo or to make the oppression going on. And I think for me personally, not just as my own identity being a genderqueer person, but also as a queer theory used in academia, I find it very, very important because it puts the stress and the focus not an individual, so we do not have to bear all the burden of the societal oppression as individuals, but it questions the society itself and the societal structures and social norms and so on.
Thank you both. Now we are going to our break. We'll be listening to a song chosen by our guest. Lauren, can you tell us what is the name of the song?
Sure. This song is called What's Up, and it's by the Four Non-Blondes.
Okay, thank you. We'll be back after this song.
25 years and my life is still trying to get up that great big hill of hope for a destination. I realized quickly when I knew I should that the world was made up of this brotherhood of man. Or whatever that means. Into a crisis of times when I'm lying in bed just to get it all out what's in my head. And I am feeling a little peculiar. Into a
Welcome back. So, Xenia, can you share with us why did you choose that song?
Yes. because that song reminded us of the TV show called Sense8, which I'm really happy that we have it today, which is directed by Lana Wachowski. And I think, in my opinion, it is the best LGBTQI representation in the television. And I really wish when I was younger that we had something like that, like that we have role models portrayed in the media as well, because there are people of different sexual orientations and different identities portrayed in the show. And I'm really, really grateful to Lana and happy that we have a chance to watch it today and younger people can relate to it and know that they're valid.
Okay, thank you to you both for sharing that with us. Lauren, can you tell us why you decided to join the United States Peace Corps? And would you mind sharing with us your experiences in your country and volunteering in the Philippines, since it has one of the worst records of violence against the trans community in Asia, and you being openly transgender?
Sure. So the United States Peace Corps is a program of the United States government, and it was started in 1961 by John F. Kennedy in an attempt to sort of reach out to international communities, and the only interaction they'd had prior to that was, you know, either military interaction with another country or something that was based around like violence or human rights or something like this. So it was important to him to institute a program where people could share cultures and could share knowledge and learning and engagement. And that was around bringing sort of mutual understanding and mutual friendship. So those are the primary goals of the Peace Corps, is to bring my knowledge and expertise to the Philippines, where I also learn and work with their knowledge and expertise and collaborate together, me sharing culture from the United States and them sharing parts of their culture with me. So there's something like 27 different countries that the Peace Corps works in. And when I applied in 2013 for the Peace Corps, they assigned you to a country at that point. So I was assigned to the Philippines and left in 2014 to go start my service there. And it's a commitment of 27 months service. So I was part of the children, youth, and families sector in the Philippines. And I was open with the Peace Corps about my gender identity because I felt like I had to be. And also for the sake of my friends and family, they were really concerned that if I wasn't open about this, then I could potentially be in a situation that was unsafe and nobody would know, and then something really bad could potentially happen. So I wrote to the country director of the Philippines and let him know about my gender identity and some of the concerns that myself and my family had. So I actually started that conversation prior to going to the Philippines. What I did decide, though, was that I worked in a really small community in the Philippines, and I was not actually open about my gender identity to my immediate community in the Philippines, and that was a very hard decision to make. But ultimately, it came down to, why am I here, and what am I trying to do in this community? And my job was to work with youth and to work with families in a small community in a very religious country, and to establish trust and to work on issues of empowerment and gender equality. And ultimately, I felt like if I shared my gender identity with them, I would lose a lot of trust, and it would take me a really long time to build those relationships back. So I was open about my gender identity with other volunteers and with a community of people in a larger town about 3 hours south of where I lived and worked, as well as with the staff at Peace Corps who were Filipino nationals. So they were really helpful and supportive, and I felt like that was really crucial because I needed to get that support from somewhere if it wasn't going to be from the community where I lived. So the thing with the Philippines being sort of one of the higher rates of violence against transgender people in Asia, it's actually a lot of that violence is done by international people against mostly transgender women in the Philippines. So several of the cases that I heard while I was there were two or three really extreme cases of violent behavior against transgender women. And two of those were done. One of them was done by a Navy officer who was stationed in the Philippines from the United States. And several others were actually done by people who were there for human trafficking in the Philippines. So a lot of these cases, while there is some violence, you know, done by Filipinos against, like, transgender Filipinos, that's not always the case. So I think that number is really inflated due to the international community that they have there and to the really high rate of, like, sex trafficking that happens in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. At no point did I really ever feel like I was at risk or in an unsafe situation. But I think a lot of that had to do with, I met with the Peace Corps medical staff and we had an emergency plan in place. If I was to go through a medical emergency, what would happen? Also, I had two or three other volunteers who were about 15 to 30 minutes from my community, mm-hmm. who I was open about my gender identity with and who would have been there to support me if anything had happened in the blink of an eye. So that's kind of a little bit about my experience, I think, there, in an effort to not go on for, you know, an hour. That's sort of some of the highlights.
Thank you, Lauren. All this relates to some questions I would like to ask you, Ksenia. People that had little contact with discussions that are related to gender and sexuality, they might find hard to understand when they hear someone talking about gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. So what is the difference between these? What does it mean? Could you explain it to us a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. So gender refers to socially constructed roles, behaviors, norms, activities, and attributes that a given society considers appropriate for genders they consider that exist in the world. So in a lot of European society, not just European societies, there's a presumption that we have two genders. In India, people recognize more than two genders. Native American people recognize more than three or four genders. So it's really a contextual thing. But in every society in the world, there are people outside of the gender binary living, breathing, and existing, regardless of if the society recognizes that or not. But anyhow, so society prescribes some ways, so the ways in which we should think, feel, or behave. For example, they say, boys don't cry, women don't get angry, women have to be compassionate, understanding, very, like, nurturing, men have to be very, like, competitive, aggressive in a way, which is good if you're a man, if you're a woman, that is not a good thing, and so on. So I think that those social norms are pretty much limiting, because we are all of us human beings, can be at the same time nurturing, compassionate, very ambitious and outspoken and expressive and so on. So gender identity refers to person's internal and individual experience of gender, which may or may not correspond with sex assigned at birth. So for example, my sex assigned at birth is female, but as I said, I identify as genderqueer person for the reasons mentioned. Gender expression, however, refers to how we express ourselves in terms of our hair, clothes, makeup, if we wear makeup or not, our mannerisms, speech, things we do, such as hobbies, sports, activities, and so on. And because of the way we express ourselves, society and other people read us in a certain way and ascribe some gender roles or gender to us when they see us. So, for example, very often I hear when people see a person they assume is a man, if the person expresses themselves in a what they would call feminine way, they assume that the person is a gay man. But there is something that we cannot know. Or if a person is very muscular and very macho type, people assume that it's a straight heterosexual man, but the person can be gay man at the same, I mean, not heterosexual. So gender expression is completely separate thing from gender identity and from gender. I, as a genderqueer person, express myself sometimes in a very, what people read, feminine way, like today I have a dress. Some other time you will see me looking very, I don't know, maybe masculine or gender neutral. So it is just the way I like to express myself. It has nothing to do with my gender. Sexual orientation, however, refers to whom we are emotionally, spiritually, physically, and or sexually attracted to. So people can be heterosexual, people can be lesbian, gay, asexual, bisexual, pansexual, and so on. There's so many different sexual orientations. My own is pansexual, which means that I can be attracted emotionally, sexually, psychologically, physically, spiritually, however, to a person regardless of their gender, because I don't see a gender as a factor in that attraction. The things that are important for me, for example, are if the person is, compassionate, if they're dedicated, if they have the capacity for love and devotion, and if they're dedicated to their friends, to the cause, to the community, there is something that, if they're emotionally intelligent and expressive, for example, that is something that I find very, very attractive. But the gender of the person is, for me personally, irrelevant. So that is why I think people often ask, why do you have so many acronyms in your LGBTQI community? But I think it's a good thing because we share something in common because we are discriminated against because of our sexuality or gender, but we are so diverse community. And I think every time when we share our diversity, actually we realize that we are not alone. There are people out there like us, people who are queer or lesbian or transgender or bisexual, whatever. So I think it's a good thing to add letters to acronyms so people can know that their lived experiences, their real lives are actually validated and recognized, and there are people out there like themselves and that they're not alone. And I think that's the first step to build community based on diversity and solidarity towards each other at the same time.
Okay, we are having interesting conversation here, but I'm afraid that our time is up. So thank you so much, Xenia. Thank you, Lauren, for sharing your thoughts and your experiences here with us today. And thank you so much to our technician, Samuel. The Talking Ed series is available online at maltauniversitybroadcasting.com. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.